Hi! You're listening to VG Panda Radio, and more specifically, part 2 of my in-depth look at the music of the Unreal series. We've got 3 more games to go, so let's jump right in! Set your Wayback Machine to summer 2002. And the hype is just starting to get crazy for the next Unreal game. It's using the all-new Unreal 2 engine, it's been 3 years since the last game, and holy crap did this game look stunning! With even more advanced graphics, a new art style for the characters that borrowed from Quake's tried-and-true thuggish marine motif, it looks set to mix the best of both games into one hell of a package. The demo came out just 2 weeks before the full version, and I remember having to spend all night downloading it on my 56K modem. I woke up early the next morning, bleary-eyed and decked out in the best SpongeBob PJs money can buy, and I sat in anticipation as the installation slider slowly creeped its way to 100%. I could not click that Play Now button fast enough. Splash screen, monitor switch to black, and what's the first thing I hear? Excuse me for a moment. I'll be right back with you. This is Unreal on steroids! Who the hell composed this? This is awesome! Hell yeah, let's start a new game! Whoa, it's like the two dudes from Unreal Tournament walking up to a lift talking some smack! They look like they're getting ready to go on stage or something! Match. There's fireworks and all this other crazy shit! Who are they going up against? Oh man! It's those thick-headed guys who look like the Space Marines from Quake! I'm back now. Needless to say, the game made a fantastic first impression. It looked awesome, it ran well even on mediocre systems, and if that opening cutscene was indicative of the game at all, this was going to be the most kick-ass gaming tournament around. I was immediately and completely sold. Okay, so yeah, right off, you can tell that there has been a bit of a shift in the musical focus. The mod music of yesteryear is gone forever, and in its place are some real instruments, better acoustics, and a much bigger, dare I say epic, sound overall. You can thank Kevin Riepel for that. I can only imagine how difficult it must have been to score this game. Clearly, Epic wanted a more orchestral sound than they'd ever had before, and mod music definitely isn't well suited for that. Besides, computers were faster and better than ever, and games regularly came on more than one CD at that point, so developers had free rein to make huge amounts of content. I think the original composers from UT weren't available anymore either, so they had to find someone else. Honestly, I don't know how Epic found Kevin. His game scoring credentials to that point were limited to things like Dead to Rights and Twisted Metal Black, and that meant I'd never heard anything he worked on before. Obviously, someone at Epic did. And the result? He did an amazing job. They must have thought so too. Amongst other things, Kevin went on to compose the score for a little-known series called Gears of War. Part about Kevin's work is how he managed to preserve some of the spirit of the original music, like the subtle tribal influences mixed with the hard-hitting synthetic techno sounds, and wrap it all up in a single orchestral package. UT 2003 was going for big in every way, and the wide-open dynamic range of an orchestra was the best way to emphasize it. Nearly every piece of music he did has a dramatic, booming underpinning that I think works surprisingly well with the gameplay. That's not to say that every song was like that, however. A couple of them even experimented with newer musical influences, like scratching. If you remember from before, there were two UT games that came out really close together. This one, and Unreal Tournament 2004 less than 2 years later. UT 2004 was basically a complete overhaul of the UT 2003 package, essentially completing what Epic had intended to be in the box in the first place. Missing modes were finished up and included, new content for existing modes was added, and a $10 rebate was offered to everyone who bought UT 2003. I'm mentioning this now because even though UT 2004 came out after Unreal 2, I still consider it to be largely the same game. And they shared almost all the same music, so for the purposes of my show here, I'm reviewing all of it in one segment. Kevin Riepel actually didn't compose all the music for this game. A few levels had tracks by one Starsky Partridge, and frankly, most of them aren't really suitable for listening outside of the game. Like this one here, they're mostly quiet, understated pieces that serve to underscore some of the more slower-paced levels. However, I have to give him credit for one track in particular. Remember back in part one of this show where I mentioned loving electronica for creating new and fascinating sounds? Well, Starsky gave me another in this track. This is why I've always loved the music in this series. They've always got something cool like this lined up in each game. Also, the focus so far has been to remain true to its musical roots, while expanding upon earlier themes. UT 2004 had quite a bit of both, and it remains as my favorite soundtrack from all the UT games. And with that, we leave the UT 2K series behind, because I've got this nagging question I just can't get out of my head. What would happen if one of gaming's most prominent and talented composers was brought in to score the true sequel to Unreal? This is the lovely aural styling of none other than Jeremy Soule, the brilliant composer behind Total Annihilation, Secret of Evermore, Knights of the Old Republic, and many more, was brought on to give some soul, if you'll forgive the expression, to the only true sequel of the original Unreal. Right away when playing this game, I sensed they were trying something new with the music. It seemed to ebb and flow more dynamically than it did in other games at the time, and yet sounded far too polished to have gone back to using mods. No, Jeremy was flexing his technical muscles as much as his musical ones, and composed all the in-game music procedurally. This means that the game's music is actually a series of little pieces of a song that queue up on the fly based on what happens to the player. This gives each session a remarkable amount of dynamism, as the score really does seem to cater to your movements and immerse you in the moment. To this day, it's the best implementation of this idea I've ever heard, and it's due in no small part to Jeremy's genius. The only problem is that the entire musical score for the game is divided up into hundreds of little pieces that only the software can mix together coherently. An official soundtrack was never released, so for a long time I was unable to have this game's music in my collection. One day, I read a post on the website Planet Unreal saying a fan by the name of Mad Max had mixed together the entire soundtrack and posted it online for all to hear. I downloaded it immediately, and to my surprise, he did a remarkable job. Let's listen to the music of the first level, built up piece by piece, just like the level itself, until it hits the player's first encounter with a hostile alien.
Thank you.
It's an incredibly slow burn, but I feel it really paints a clear mental picture of wandering through a derelict compound, seeing things in the corner of your eye until eventually you're attacked and forced to defend yourself. And hey, that works well, because that's exactly what you're doing. Jeremy is well known for creating extremely cinematic music, and that's precisely the experience delivered. I especially enjoy Jeremy's using of a sound in the background here at the end that is awfully reminiscent of an alarm clock going off. That aspect of it conjures something deep and primal in me that demands I wake up and pay attention! Unreal 2 is heavily story-based, with gameplay alternating between briefings and character development on board your ship, and missions on various planet surfaces. As far as direct lineage from the first game goes, it doesn't follow any specific characters or events from Unreal apart from having a few recognizable names here and there, and of course the series' iconic and menacing alien race, the Scar. Unfortunately, the game was not very well received by many. Commonly echoed issues were with the story, listing problems ranging from it being too slow to being too stupid, and others complaining that the game itself was otherwise just too boring for their tastes. Though I do acknowledge that some of the voice acting was a little too understated, I highly enjoyed the game's story, particularly with how each character was written. Beyond that, the give-and-take flow of the game worked very well to break up the experience into more manageable pieces, and better yet, prevented any chance of actually getting bored by the combat, a sure death knell for a first-person shooter. The highlight of the experience, aside from its ending, which I still consider to be one of the most powerful and memorable endings I've ever seen, is the mission on the planet Sulphuron. Throughout the game, you're going to different planets collecting a series of strange, powerful artifacts that various unsavory interests are trying to get before you do. This mission in particular places you in a huge open desert with barely any cover, and it is your job to break into a well-defended compound a few clicks away from the landing zone. The goal is to rescue some scientists who have been taken hostage by a rival faction who has discovered one of the artifacts on this planet, so your mission is really twofold: save the hostages and get the artifact. The mission itself is challenging, dynamic, and open-ended. You can approach the compound from any side and breach it in multiple ways, and just when you think you're finished, they throw you a new wrinkle. Pickup's coming, but not before the bad guy's reinforcements do. The worst part? You have only 1 minute to fortify the base you just tore to pieces. This mission works incredibly well because you spend half of it learning the terrain and how to circumvent the compound's defenses, and then you have to use that knowledge to keep an entire enemy strike force out. It's tense, exciting, and has the best song in the game to back it up. Once again, I'm at a loss to edit it down to something shorter than it is, because all that could result is a lessening of its impact. If you think Jeremy Soule's only strength is orchestral music, I offer only this. As far as we know, this game is the end of the Unreal series. The developer, Legend Entertainment, folded soon after Unreal 2's release, with the official word from Atari saying that it was purely for business reasons, and Legend Entertainment had no further projects planned anyway. Whether or not that's true, we'll likely never know. In any case, it's still up to Epic as to what happens to the series from now on. We'll just have to wait and see. And as it happens, there has been one more Unreal game released so far, 2007's Unreal Tournament 3. UT3 is a strange beast. Hot on the heels of the release of Gears of War for Xbox 360 and PC, and the latest in a series of successful multiplayer shooters, UT3 looked like it was going to keep the tradition strong. Running the latest version of the Unreal Engine, developed in tandem for consoles and PC, and hyped for years, this game looked to be the best Unreal tournament ever. It was released during the holiday season of 2007, one of the most competitive release periods in recent years, and as far as I can tell, it completely tanked, relatively speaking. Ever since I got my hands on it, I've been trying to figure out why the game just doesn't feel right. Frankly, I still don't know why, but it's pretty clear that I'm not alone in that feeling. Though the critics were favorable, interest seemed to drop off rather sharply, causing the game to be sold at half its original price less than 6 months after it released. Compare that with Call of Duty 4, released at almost exactly the same time, and which to this day retails for the full $49.99. Even the music suffers from a strange, unfortunate duality. The compositional duties were apparently split about 50-50 between Rom DePrisco and Jesper Kitt, and unfortunately their musical styles clash far more than they mesh. We'll start by taking a look at Rom's work. The official soundtrack has only 11 original tracks attributed to Rom, which is a far cry less than even UT2004, which had over 40 by Mr. Reeble alone. Well, let's take a listen. You might be thinking what I'm thinking. If the rest of the music is like this, then it seems that all traditional melodic development has been traded away in favor of strong, steady rhythms. For the most part, this is the case. Once again, it actually works fairly well when playing the game, but listening to it by itself sounds a bit awkward. As it turns out, there's a reason for that besides quality of composition. UT3 is the first and only tournament game so far to try and do what the single-player focus games did, dynamic music. But whereas Unreal's music was mixed on the fly by the software, and Jeremy's compositions for Unreal 2 were done in little pieces from the beginning, Rom and Jesper composed the music normally, with specific direction to have clearly distinct moments of subduction and intensity. Once that was accomplished, each track was cut up and remixed into two audio threads, one with all the subdued moments, and the other with the more intense stuff. As you can hear, it actually works out okay when heard in its original form. The implementation in the game, however, really leaves much to be desired. It appears to be nothing more than crossfading between two beat-matched streams of audio and leaving it at that. The result is awkward at best and a bit of a mess at worst. The music can easily meander between quiet and intense and back again in the span of 30 seconds, which really doesn't sound very good. I don't think they were really meant to be heard this way, but at least the songs are in their original form on the soundtrack. So, before we take a look at Jesper's music, there's one last song that falls into the category of having an awesome, funky instrument that can only be electronically generated. This track plays on an icy vehicle capture the flag map, with the two teams occupying imposing fortresses at opposite ends of an enormous cavern. This is probably my favorite song on the soundtrack, not only because of that awesome, gritty sound, but also because of its catchy, off-kilter beat. actually got the soundtrack to this game after completing the single-player campaign, interested to hear what the original versions of all the songs sounded like. When I got the package, I was pretty surprised to find that it was 2 CDs long, and that's also when I found out that there was more than one composer. I'd heard Rom DiPrisco did the entire thing, but here on the package was an entire second disc of music by a different composer. Wow, it might even have stuff they didn't actually use in the game! I remember what the unused music from Unreal sounded like, so this might be like that! As my sarcastic tone may have alerted you to by this point, this is not the case. What is the case is some of the worst, finger quotes, music I have ever heard in my life. I still can't make it all the way through the CD. Wanna know why? Try this on for size. Blah! In a word, awful. The entire second disc is made up of terrible remixes of the original music from UT3, strangely enough, and this crap. It's like high-pitched squeals and random cacophonous sounds mashed together. Oh yeah, and that song I played just now? It's almost 10 minutes long. Of that. In short, the less said about it, the better. Wow, this certainly didn't end quite like I imagined. Yes, it's true that the musical quality has faded quite a bit by now, and the series isn't what it used to be. But that's the beauty of the past. Everything that was good is still good. It was my goal to bring into the light the best of the best, and the best of the worst, too. I've always felt that there's something to like about this series' music as a whole, and that's why I did this show. Looking back at the original game, it's hard for me not to feel nostalgic, and even a little wistful at days gone by. With everything the original game brought to the table, it's quite unfortunate that it seems to be all but forgotten now. And as far as I can tell, the series is over. I'm sure the tournament will live on, but we may never again see a single-player Unreal game. But you know what? If that's the way it goes, it really isn't so bad. Unreal, Return to Napoli, and Unreal 2 are complete games, mercifully free of cliffhanger endings or dangling plot threads. They each gave us all we needed in one box, and that's a damn sight better than what I can say for most things in our over-franchised world. As for the tournament games, who knows exactly where that'll go? I'd say that it may perhaps have been too difficult trying to please the hardcore PC gaming audience who grew up with these games, and the console people who for the most part had never even heard of the series. In the future, I'd love to see things simplified again, and all they need to do is go fire up a copy of Unreal Tournament and play a few rounds to get an idea of how it worked. And even though UT3 was a flop to many people, I still managed to get a kick out of it. I may never play the older games again, and I may never relive some of my favorite moments, but therein lies the beauty of music. All I have to do is queue up the soundtracks, hit random, and soon it's all coming back to me. I think I can live with that. That's all for this show. I'm Panda, and thank you so much for listening. Until next time.